Namo myoho renge kyo. Hi, friends. Hi, I hope that you're well and secure. Thank you for being here and thank you for your practice. This is an important term today. It's an ancient term, but because of its relevance to what we do, every now and again, I get a question or somebody, not so much anymore, but I used to get questions about what's these magic words that you chant? You know, what's this magical thing? And as you hear me say all the time, there's no such thing as magic or mysticism in Buddhist practice. So there's a long history of this thinking, though. And of course, today we still have tremendous amounts of religions and so on and so forth that are very mystical and magical. They depend on it because you can't question magic and mysticism. But Buddhism is an actual experience, right? And a contemporary one, one you feel now. It's not some future possibility. It's actual, affecting every life moment. So, not a religion. The word is dharani, or dharani. There's probably other pronunciations, but it's an ancient word. It predates Buddhism, to be certain. And the reason why I think it's important to know this word is that in the West, we're familiar with a word called, or mantra as a word. But mantra sometimes are invocations of a teaching. But they're much more general terms and used to be individual thought experiments and focal thought patterns. They're a little bit more attached to samsara in a way. A dharani is always a dharani, and a dharani is specifically a concatenated sound, inflections, chant, but symbolically capturing a much greater breadth of teaching. That is a dharani. So when we chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, we are actually chanting a dharani. Okay? And let me read you my introductory paragraph into this term in the upcoming Buddhism Reference Volume 2. In the book, The Profound Meaning of the Daimoku, one of my books on the book site, and you can get it electronically on threefoldrows.com. Go to the ebooks page, you'll see The Profound Meaning of the Daimoku. It's a collection of many of the writings of Bodhisattva Nichiren on the subject of the Daimoku. And you'll hear this refrain throughout all of these writings, the meaning of each character of the title of the sutra, but not just a title, even words within the Lotus Sutra. And Shakyamuni talks about this, that to capture even just a four-verse gatha or a single phrase actually captures the meaning, the depth, the profundity, the action of the entire teaching. Right? You've heard this before. I mean, and it's, you kind of read past it and go, oh, that's interesting, and you keep going, right? But this is a critical idea. Myo has its meaning, right? It has, in that profound meaning of the Daimoku, with all the Goshos I've collected in there, that meaning gets stated several different ways, right? So it's not that the character has a specific meaning, it's that it has a contextual meaning and a profound meaning that reverberates in many very different ways in the moment-to-moment life, right? You could say moment-to-moment is the very definition of a frequency, right? That is a frequency. So there's an alignment and a particular effect to that alignment. Myo. Also, ho. You hear me talk about myo being potential, ho being instantiation. But in different contexts, that means something different. But it's a huge action, a vast collection of directions of energy, momentum, yes? Reng, ge, and kyo. But also na and mu. Every single vocalization of the Lotus Sutra collects the profundity of the entire teaching. Of course, you have to study the entire teaching in order to realize that it is collected in each sound, each character. So when chanted, each contain or represent the entirety of the Lotus Sutra teaching of the Dharma, right? This idea was not the invention of Nichiren, as some might claim. This method of invoking the entirety of a teaching in a conceptual phrase or phrases has a long history throughout the Asian continent, cultures, and traditions. In contrast to the more familiar term in the Western world of mantras, are not strictly representational invocations of a greater text or teaching. A dharani always is. So that's a dharani. Now, in Western translations, and non-Western translations, the authors, the organizations that translate, often labeled dharanis spells. They fall into this magical world, right? But by doing that, they negate the profound meaning of a dharani. And we're going to come up on some. We're getting close to those chapters in the Lotus Sutra where you run into dharani. And they look like just abstract baby sounds. But believe me, they are, a more accurate word would be an incantation than a spell, right? That sounds like you learn Buddhism at Hogwarts, right? Some of you may not know what that means, but basically it's not magic, okay? It's an invocation. It's an invocation of a larger understanding of the practice. It's a shortcut, if you will. But not a shortcut that diminishes, a shortcut that allows you to encapsulate the entirety of a teaching in one effort. In Britannica, if you go online and look up dharani, it'll say, in Buddhism and Hinduism, a sacred Sanskrit phrase of great efficacy, used as a verbal protective device or talisman and as a support or instrument for concentration, right? The dharani is a short summary of the essential doctrine contained in a much longer sacred text and serves as an aid to its retention. Makes sense, yeah? Thank you, Britannica. Properly recited, the dharani conveys the same merit as reading the entire work. The meaning of a dharani is often very difficult to determine and may sound to the uninitiated like a string of meaningless words, the accuracy of which is, nevertheless, carefully guarded when passed on from teacher to pupil. Compare that to a mantra, which is not always like that, yes? Notice the words essential doctrines in the above quoted text and consider Nichiren's writing on the one essential phrase, right? The essential practice. We've talked about that. I thought the etymology and nomenclature was interesting. Comes from Wikipedia in this case. The word dharani derives from a Sanskrit root, dhar, meaning to hold or maintain. This root is likely derived from the historical Vedic religions of ancient India, where chants and melodious sounds were believed to have innate spiritual and healing powers, even if the sound cannot be translated and has no meaning, as in music. The same root gives dharma or dhamma, According to the East Asian Buddhism Studies scholar Paul Kopp, some Buddhist communities outside India sometimes refer to dharanis with alternate terms such as mantra or hridaya, or paritrana, or raksha, Pali raka, guti or vidya, though these terms also have other contextual meanings in Buddhism. So I thought that was interesting. I think it's important to note, though, and very essential to our understanding when we get to those chapters in the next video or two, when we are, and I'll remind us, of the dharani being a conceptual invocation of a teaching. They don't just stand on their own as, baby talk. They are actually constructed to invoke and the insights we get from our broader teaching. So their efficacy, I like that word that Britannica used, right? Anyway, I thought that would be useful. That's a word that goes zipping by. Nobody ever talks about it. And when they do, they tend to use the wrong words, like it's a spell, it's a magical thing, which is a horrendous misunderstanding of what they are, right? All right, that's the term for today. Now I'll do a video on the Lotus Sutra BDK translation. Have a good one. Take care of your health, and I'll see you in the next one, okay? Don't forget all the links in the description. Any way you can support is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful day. Keep your practice strong. Bye for now.